Okay. This interview is on September the 5th, 2012, with Nikolai Galileu from the Antioch House of Studies.
And you want to
And what?
And you want
to well, we can do it in two different. Oh, yeah, let's do it together. That'd be good. Right.
And I you want to please.
Yes, come on.
Dialogue,
so. You want to why don't you come and sit over here too so that you can both answer at the same time.
Okay. But I'll
and hear you.
Okay.
Make sure that you're on the thing. Okay. the given that we start with is the importance of icons. That's been recognized for centuries. The importance of icons. We know that, so we're taking that as a given. And what I'm exploring is the phronema or the orthopraxia of the icons within the church, and whether they're adequate for our faithful, and if they've been taught enough within their religious life to really be able to understand and use icons as the church has used them in the past. And this is for America. Now, this isn't for anywhere else. This is just for America. Okay, first of all, what are your thoughts about, do you agree or disagree with the basic premise that, I'm not sure if there has been enough teaching and background in our icons for our people?
I think the teaching related to the phenomenon of the icon. See, there are two aspects here. Is the phenomenon of the icon, the existence of the icon as a phenomenon, and then the presence of the icon in the church. There is an ontological / phenomenological side of this, and then there is a pastoral didaxis side mm-hmm. of this.
Mm-hmm.
I personally believe that the icon is one of the most efficient, to use this dry word, mean by which people can be taught on one side and put in mystical relation on the other side with God. It's being said by the Holy Fathers that if you want to show someone or teach someone or help someone to understand what orthodoxy is, what is the Orthodox Church about, and so forth, bring him into the church and show him the icons. This might sound like a, you know, poetical, lyrical formula, a little bit calophile and so forth, because it sounds beautiful and it has a fragrance, but actually it's much deeper than it seems. Why? Because the human being facing the icon is facing the holy alternative of an anthropology. Today, the human being, the post-fall, post-Adamic human being, it assumed a fallen anthropology, a fallen hypostasis, a fallen way of the human being to exist, which is assumed as being the normal state of fact. This is part of the fallen pattern of thinking of the contemporary human being. So in order the human being to understand deeply its reality, the reality of the real anthropo-hypostasis, what it means in reality, in truth, to be human, the human being needs to face the icon. Because the icon is not a fabricated, charming image that overpowers us with a visual story about divinity. It's the archetype of who we are. It's the archetype of who we essentially are, and because we lost that type of hypostasis because of the original sin, then it's the archetype of who we are called to be. So the contemporary anthropology of the human being today is facing that holy anthropology of the archetype, which is the essential vector for the understanding of the human being of who we really are. So it's a mystical aspect in all this. There is a mystical aspect, there is a pastoral aspect, and many others, but there is an anthropological aspect. The icon is our archetype in an anthropological sense. Because let's not forget that Adam was talking to God in the Garden of Eden. He was in that position in relation with God, which we lost. And the icon is reminding us, or is teaching us, out of the blue and for the first time, who we really are supposed to be. And where this you know, field of potentiality, the chance of recovering, reconquering the likeness, where is this bringing us? If the icon wouldn't exist, we wouldn't know anything about this. Or just the teachings, the sophisticated theology that we are dealing today with, would be such an hermetic world. The icon opens to us a very palpable horizon of who we should be. So, I think, generally speaking, is never being taught enough about icons. Because all this, you know, movement of us towards the archetype of who we are supposed to be, it's asymptotical anyway. But I think today, the human world does not only lack the knowledge or the understanding of icon, the human world today is lacking the icon. Ontologically and phenomenologically, the human being today is lacking the icon, which is the phenomenological backbone of who we are supposed to be. We are lacking the icon. So it's vital for us to understand who we are. And the connection with the icon is essential in this. Because the icon is the only one who offers us this palpable image. It's not a matter of interpretation, our intellectual level of expectation or understanding and doctrinal interpretation. And it's clear. You just stare at it and you understand who you should be.
And that seems to be the draw of, for people that don't really know or are not Orthodox or are new to Orthodoxy or whatever. People are drawn to icons and they tell me that. I love them. I don't know why. I don't know why I feel this connection, but I just feel this connection with them, you know, whether they're Orthodox or not.
It's the most natural thing to happen. Mm-hmm. It's because of this very reason that the icon, I'm trying to avoid the word represents, but is delivering towards us the image of who we really are. This is an anthropological aspect. Mm-hmm. And when you think about the human being in its fullness, you cannot only use the word anthropological or anthropology. It's a sacramental anthropology. Mm-hmm. It's the anthropology of our mystery as human beings. Mm-hmm. Because in the world today, when we say anthropology, we talk about the structure of the physical structure of the human being, physiology, and all these kind of things. Mm-hmm. We can go into psychologies, but that's the subtlest horizon that we can touch if we talk anthropology in laic terms. Mm-hmm. But if we look at the human being in its fullness, then we are stepping on the territory of the mysticism of the human being, the holiness of the human being, mm-hmm. the sacramental dimension of the human being, which is the major dimension of the human being, by the way. So the icon is putting us in this situation, which is so inconvenient or confusing for some people, naturally, of displaying right in front of us that kind of mystical mirror. Okay? It's a mystical mirror, mm-hmm. because it displays towards us that archetype. So we are holy and we are in the image and likeness of God, no matter whether we are Christians or not, no matter whether we are religious or atheist, it doesn't matter. That is an anthropological dimension of who we are. Mm-hmm. We are in the image and likeness of God, no matter whether we are acknowledging it or not. Mm-hmm. That's a biased aspect of our knowledge, but existential and phenomenological speaking, the human being is created in the image and likeness of God. And this is what the icon tells us. It reminds us about the very archetype of who we are, the image and likeness of God. So the connection between all those people who are drawn towards the icon and the icon does not depend on the fact of whether they are Orthodox or
right,
not.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's that horizon of mystery of who we are anthropologically, if we understand anthropology in its fullness, encompassing the mystical horizon of the human being, the sacramental horizon of the human being, and the holy origin of the human being, if we really understand the human being in its fullness.
Right. So this would be a very important aspect that people need to be aware of when they're, that would be one of the things that they should really know, that that's what they're looking at, and that they're coming, this connection.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's essential for people to be aware of this archetypal connection,
mm-hmm.
to be aware and to be given the comfort, if you like, of acknowledging the fact that they are entitled
mm-hmm.
to look in the eyes of the icon and to feel that that is my parent, anthropologically speaking. He is the source of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I am entitled to feel related to him.
Mm-hmm.
He's not an alien. Mm-hmm. He doesn't come from Mars.
Mm-hmm.
He is like me. And I have to be like him. And when I'm saying I have to be, I'm not saying it in terms of a sturdy code of ethics or morals.
Mm-hmm.
It's not moralistic.
Mm-hmm.
It's anthropological.
Mm-hmm.
And we have inside of ourselves this nostalgia of holiness.
Mm-hmm.
And anecdotally enough, someone was telling me yesterday, or I don't know when, there was this person, she was a convert into the Orthodox Church, and she said, oh, there are too many icons in this church, and they make me feel very uncomfortable, because they make me feel so unholy. And, you know, I'm so uncomfortable to this, and I'd be so happy, you know, not to have so many icons in the church.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this reaction confirms what I just said so far. It's just another type of relation of the human being with holiness. It's a fear that we lost that holiness.
Mm-hmm.
These type of people need to be encouraged. St. John was saying in the prologue of his gospel, you don't really, there's no knowledge without love. The essential vector of knowledge is actually love, if you understand love in its fullness. So it is love who brings these people in their legitimate place, in their legitimate position of being, of acknowledging the fact that they are entitled to look at icons and consider themselves and perceive themselves related to the icons rather than being scared by them.
Mm-hmm. What other aspects of the icon do you think are important for our Orthodox people to know, that maybe they don't, or not even that maybe they do already, but other, I mean, if you were, say you were going to, you had somebody that was a cradle Orthodox, they had icons, they may use them in an icon corner in a house, maybe not, they know they're there, they do their stuff all in front of them, but there's not a real connection. How, what kinds of things do you think need, or how could you help them to gain that relationship?
You know, in order to illustrate through a parable the relation between God and the human world, Jesus used the prodigal son, he used the owner of the vineyard,
mm-hmm.
and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
When you deal with your own child, and he has these moments in which his, we say, naughty, he becomes less aware of your parentship, which you see that puts him in danger, because he loses essential coordinates of his existence, because of his tendency to disconnect from your parentship, in the sense of a misunderstood need of independency. Then you have to find ways to remind him about your parentship and to remind him about his real position in relation to you as a parent. Of course, in different cultures we do this in different ways, but it became an instinctual thing to the need of reminding your child that you are the parent for his sake. So he doesn't become fragile in relationship with the world, so he can feel that parentship of yours being there, safeguarding him. We need to do the same thing in the church in relation with the icon and the people, because we are kind of pendulating between these two extreme situations. The converts who don't know yet anything about icons, but they are more entitled to that situation. And the cradle Orthodox who don't remember anything about icons, because the icon became a cliché element in their existence. Mm-hmm. They've been born in a house that has icons. They went, since they were kids, to churches that had icons all over the place. So that became a cliché element in their existence. The icon is there because this is how it should be. So the equation of his relationship with the icon is a very short and very rudimentary one, and a very automatic one. And it's a paralyzed equation. It's not a dynamic equation. Mm-hmm. To him, the icon is just a dry given, and eventually there is no difference between the icon and the closet he has in his house. It's almost like a furniture, because he's used to it. Mm-hmm. You know, he needs a closet to put his coat, and the icon is there because this is how it is. Mm-hmm. My grandmother have it, my whatever, so it's just there and that's it. It's just another spot of color on the wall, because this is how it's customarily done. Mm-hmm. Well, this paralyzed relation with the icon needs to be revitalized to mm-hmm. these people. I would even go as far as to say that the cradles whose relationship with the icon has been paralyzed because of circumstances or because of historical reasons or who knows, psychosocial reasons, it doesn't matter. But if they reach this point in which their relationship with the icon is paralyzed, it becomes a fossil relation, then it is our duty to shake that dust from that connection.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And basically to re-alphabetize them in terms of icons. Mm-hmm. And to tell them, you know, these guys that you see in the wall, this is not the way we decorate our churches so they are beautiful. Let me tell you what's going on here and why are they here. Because you saw them in the house of all your ancestors and so forth, and you live in that comfort, you know, that almost apatheia of the given of having these things in your life. But you do not have them in your life if you don't have a relationship with them.
Mm-hmm. And how do we cultivate that relationship?
Well, we need to just teach them.
And is teaching, and what kinds of things do we need to teach them?
Well, now I can offer you a very biased point of view.
Okay, that's fine.
Which has to do with the way I've been brought up and, you know, all that psychology of teaching that I've been accustomed to. What I would personally do, I would gather all the cradle people I have in the church or mm-hmm. whatever, mm-hmm. and I would ask them. You know, I would apparently rely on their, you know, encyclopedical knowledge of icons. Mm-hmm. Since you guys know so well how things are, let's see. I would organize a little friendly contest, you know, and offering a pie in the sky to the winner, just to see, not to see for myself, but to put them in the situation of facing the reality, mm-hmm. facing each other's knowledge of this, and facing the actual fact of their actual knowledge. Mm-hmm. So I would kind of start shaking a bit the dust, or maybe I would face, you know, cradle people with converts, and it might come out that the converts know better. And I wouldn't be surprised. Let's not forget that during the iconoclasm, it's been the West so many times which defended the icons. Because in the Phanariot East, in the Byzantine East, yes, in that right. sense of Byzantine that we know very well, the icons couldn't have been defended. Because all those subtleties and the fogginess of the Byzantine type of thinking made things impossible. It's the same Byzantinism that annoyed so much the Crusades. And they came and sacked Constantinople because they were so frustrated that they can't come to an understanding with the leaders of Byzantium. So that kind of dust needs to be shaken. And these people need to be helped lovingly, helped in love, to face the reality of the fact that their relationship with icons is paralyzed. They need to realize that.
Can I just...
Yeah, please.
Very, it's much simpler, but we were having this discussion one time, something very similar in a women's group that's at my church, and the priest that was there at the time, which is Father De Waters, he said pretty simply about the icon that we have to change the way that we see it. And instead of viewing it as something that, you know, oh, it's, yes, of course you're reverent and it's holy and so on, but you have to see it as your family member, you know, and in order to feel that connection to your family member, you have to know them. You have to know their life. You have to know what they've done, who they were, so on and so forth. And then when you look at them similarly to the way that, with that same feeling that you have towards a photo of your deceased grandmother. You know, there's that connection, which is an emotional one. There's a relationship there. You can't just look at them as belonging to the church. It's a part of you as well, you know. So just connecting to what you were saying earlier, he simplified it so much by relating it to family. And I think that's one of the biggest things. At least I grew up in the church, and I was afraid. I would look at them, and I just, one, I didn't understand what they were, but two, it was this feeling always that there was a separation there between me and them, because that was something that I had to have such a deep respect for, and but I didn't understand that connection between me and the icon, what the icon is showing, you know, what I'm looking at. So I think, I mean, you have to get all the way down to that root of changing people's, either changing it or teaching them really what it is they're looking at, you know, and opening them up to learning about all these saints and so on.
Right. Would you include giving them the opportunity to learn as part of that responsibility of the church?
Yeah, I mean, I think any chance that there is, I think, you have, one, if you start from young children and they understand, I think we, the way, because I've been exposed to the way things are taught, and I think that we tend to rely on certain statements or whatever, but we don't go deep into anything. We stay on the surface, and no one ever really knows by the end what is really meant by that. So we have to have like a little bit of a deeper understanding, I think, of what we're actually saying. And we talked about it a little bit yesterday, that whole idea of, you know, you say, oh, when you kiss the icon, and oh, it's, you know, but what does all this mean to a child who then becomes an adult and is teaching the next child, you know? So I think we have to be more, in a sense, forceful, but very clear as to what this is.
Yeah, I think what we have to reconquer, all of us, this is not about cradles and converts anymore. It's reconquer the naturality, the very naturality of our relationship with the icon. We need to understand that the icon does not belong to a to a code of ethics specific to the world of the church.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The icon has to do with us, mm-hmm. with us as human beings.
And that reminder that what we're looking at, yes, they're saints, but they're human beings.
And they are members of the congregation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's why they are there.
Right.
Because they are with us.
Mm-hmm.
I remember what Father Dumitru Staniloae, who's, to my joy and happiness, he's quoted so frequently by Father Joseph Antipas in his course. He was talking about love, Father Dumitru Staniloae, and he was saying, the full love means that I fall in love with you, of course, because I like you and so forth, but because my heart discovers Christ in you. My heart is a mystical antenna. Our heart is a mystical antenna. Mm-hmm. It spins continuously and it discovers wherever holiness is, whether we acknowledge it or not. It doesn't matter. Somewhere subliminally, we are in a continuous search for holiness. So I fall in love with you because Christ in me discovers, identifies, feels the presence of Christ in you. And my heart, in the mystical sense, in the Hebraic sense, heart, falls in love with Christ in you, and your heart falls in love with Christ in me. If there is no connection at that level, then our love is just a purely human convention. It's not full love. This is the type of relation we need to have with the icons. Because, in fact, our heart, that mystical antenna, is identifying the holiness in the icon, which makes some people to be drawn towards the icon, whether they are Orthodox or not. And it makes other people be uncomfortable in presence of the icon, whether they are Orthodox or not. Because there are Orthodox who are uncomfortable in the presence of the icons, let's face it. Mm-hmm. And the reason is anthropological. It has to do with the psychology of the current human being, of the human being today, of who we are today. Mm-hmm. It has to do with that. So that's the territory that we need to reconquer. It's not doctrinal. It doesn't have to do with dogmatics and so forth. It has to do with this very natural connection that Ioana was mentioning before, feeling him as a member of the family. Well, if he is me, if he is my archetype, of course he's part of my immediate life. Mm-hmm. He does not become part of my church life only. The icon doesn't become part of my life only once I step the threshold of the church to step in. Mm-hmm. The icon is a permanent member of my immediate life, of my family and so forth. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this is what we need to reconquer, to restore this very simple natural relation. And I strongly believe that people need to be rethought what the deal with the icons is. Mm-hmm. And I would personally and biasly believe, as a person who teaches the theology of the icon, I strongly believe that people need to understand that there is no dichotomy between saints and us. We don't belong to two dichotomically different categories. I would explain them why the saint looks the way he looks. Not because this is how we customarily draw guys who are in the icons, but because they used to look like us and they lived such a life that brought them to the point of a clear and obvious and wonder-working holiness, which, among many other things, meant a morphological change in their expression, in the structure of their body, in the way they are looking, the way they look towards us, and so forth. These are natural things that happen to the human being when the human being becomes holy. And a human being who becomes holy can be anyone. Saint Mary of Egypt used to be a prostitute, and she became holy. It's not a road that's open to some and closed to some others. We are being called to become icons, because this is who we are naturally. Not because we are relatives of someone who's deciding who's going to become an icon or not. The kingdom of God is not the American corporate world. It's honest and equidistant. We are all called towards iconia, towards this kind of iconomia of grace, which makes us icons, if we get to that point. There is no forbidden road for anyone in this sense.
That really answers the importance in how to bring in those aspects of the icon that we usually talk about that are different, you know, for people to look for, you know, the features of the face, the elongated body, and all of that, and that really ties it back together very well with what you had said at the beginning.
Yeah, there is this term that we are using in such a mistaken way, and which creates this mental dichotomy. We say that the icons are stylization. This is a term which, artistically speaking, means something else. It's dramatically misused. Then the icon doesn't have anything to do with stylization, because holiness does not stylize the human being. Holiness changes the human being. There is a natural metamorphosis. Our metamorphosis towards holiness is natural, is not unnatural. It's not a favoritism that God does for us. Anyone can step on that journey. It's natural. It belongs to our very nature. So it's not stylization. Nobody stylized St. Nicholas or St. John Chrysostom. Their morphology, their physiognomy changed because of the type of life they lived. It's so easy. People need to understand that. Mm-hmm. It is natural. Someone who fasts the way the fathers are telling us and the way the church is teaching us and so forth will always look different from someone who eats pork every day and skips the fasting. The second guy will breathe differently, his skin will have a different color, he will be sicker, heavier, slower in movement, slower in thinking, slower in praying, and so forth. It's natural. Everyone knows that. Mm-hmm. Even the doctors, who know so little about God, they almost tell us the same things. It's so easy to understand. We just have to bring it one step farther and to connect these elementary truths of our bodily being to our mystical metabolism. To that kind of metabolism that we are called to live in the perspective of. To help people to think a bit more eschatologically and not to think only inside the kitchen, I'm sorry. You know, we are using this metaphor, thinking inside the box and thinking outside the box. Well, I would bring it down to ground, to the earth, in these terms. Thinking inside the kitchen or outside the kitchen. If you think sausages, you cannot think holiness. So this tells a lot about these morphological changes in the human being if the human being evolves normally, which means evolves towards holiness. Mm-hmm. That is the normal evolution of the human being, not stuffing ourselves with sausages. Mm-hmm. So people need to understand that the bridge between us, the way we look, and those guys in the icons, the way they look, it's a very natural bridge. It's not a dichotomic connection or separation.
And I think that would be something that nobody would even think of unless they were taught, or unless it was brought to their attention.
Yes.
I mean, and that's one of the things that I think, you know, needs to needs to happen.
Yes. It's very easy to assume that someone who looks so different from you belongs to a different world than you. Mm-hmm. People need to understand that the saints and us are co-dwellers of the same world. Mm-hmm. Especially from a mystical standpoint, if we understand the sense of liturgy and so forth, and we understand that we are, you know, doxologizing and liturgizing with the angels and with the saints and so forth, we need to understand all
and
that
the
togetherness.
Temple, and the temple being where we're all together.
Absolutely.
Everyone is there.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything else you wanted to add, Joanna?
The only thing, because it's something that I've heard, that because you're asking about the teaching, I think that there's a lot of focus placed on being able to recognize the icon as far as who the saint is, recognizing certain elements of the icon, or is it a martyr, is it this, is it that. And I think that's an important teaching, but if what Nikolai's referring to was covered firstly, the rest comes naturally, because you would get to know the saints, mm-hmm. you would know who they were, you would know their life, and so it's not just picking these things out and saying, okay, because I hear a lot of this, like, that someone knows so much about icons because what they can tell you
yeah,
is
they can
who
read,
saint
they
is
can
or,
read that icon
yeah.
really well, you know,
and yet
and
they
that's
don't necessarily
not really,
know the theology of
yeah,
that.
And
yeah.
that's, that I would, I don't think that's the ultimate thing you want to know. I mean, you're going to learn that as
mm-hmm.
you go along, but I don't think that's the most important thing.
Or the starting point.
I think a lot of our, the way that we're taught and the people that we're taught by don't know, there's few of them that know what we've talked about here, what Nikolai's talked about here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that needs to be taught to our clergy so that they can in turn, you know, teach it to their people or incorporate it within their own being so that it comes out naturally, you know, so that they,
Also just that understanding, I mean, it's not, in teaching it, you're not teaching something separate. It's not like you're teaching just about the icon. You're teaching Orthodox theology.
Right.
You know, so people have to realize that there's that whole connection there with
mm-hmm.
everything in the church.
Right.
Yeah. We tend to see things, I think, sometimes in isolation, like we separate them out,
mm-hmm.
but they're not,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's very true. Actually, this brings things to a larger picture, because these are issues that we are facing, these are cultural issues that we are facing, especially in the Western societies, in cultures today. It's this hidden, I would even go as far as to say purposely hidden, difference between real knowledge and surrogate of knowledge. We live in a world in which we are surrounded by brochures, how to become whatever in a weekend.
Yeah.
You know, how to become iconographer in a weekend, going to whatever shop who teaches us how to transfer a drawing on a piece of wood and fill the areas of color, and then we leave after 2 days or 1 day or 6 hours from that place with the feeling that we are painting icons. Or, you know, how to become a fitness instructor in a weekend. We are surrounded by this emptiness,
mm-hmm.
this aggressive culture and attack that the Western cultures is orienting against us, this attack of mediocrity, of surrogate of knowledge. And the surrogate of knowledge is producing this disease of our mind and of our soul. It disconnects us from ourselves because it destroys what we call in the Orthodox theology humbleness. It destroys this sharpness that we need to have in relation with our souls. And all this territory is being replaced by this hunger of self-satisfaction by shortcuts,
mm-hmm.
by using surrogates. Because of course it makes you feel good to think that in a weekend you can become the equal of a guy who used 6 years of his life to learn nothing. But it doesn't trigger in you any problem, any moral or whatever problem, to just face him and to consider yourself his equal.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody perceives these things as absurd as they actually are. Because this hunger for surrogates is a disease of our soul and mind. It's an ethical disease, a psychological disease. And we need to vindicate this aspect. We need to heal it. So, this superficial knowledge, you know, giving people this illusion that they have this intellectual position towards icons because they know what the whatever tree in the hospitality of Abraham means. It's called the Mamre tree and whatever, whatever. People need to understand that that's not what the icon is about.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be reconnected with the phenomenological essence of the icon,
mm-hmm.
which is simple. It's simple. It's not complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Our strategies of replacing the real knowledge with the surrogates, that is what makes things complicated. We need a whole mental strategy, a whole mental marketing strategy, mental marketing strategy, in order to deliver mediocrity towards people and to give them the illusion that they are in relationship with the actual truth. This is a huge campaign which is oriented against us and is digging at the root of the human being. And this is what complicates things. The truth is simple. And God inherited towards us a very simple truth. And we need to see it.
Mm-hmm.
That is all.
Well, this is extraordinary. Thank you so much, both of you.
Thank you so much.
And this is why I love coming back here.
We love to see you back.
Good day.
Thank you.
Okay.
Is it time for lunch yet?
It is. Yes. It's there in the middle. Then we can go. We'll go straight upstairs and.
Okay. You don't know how to walk. You have to watch Phil Collins in that clip.